Welcome to the India FinTech Diaries, the only podcast focused exclusively on the Indian FinTech market. I'm Elroy.
And I'm Hemant. In each episode, we dive into the latest trends, ideas, innovations, business models, and personalities that are shaping India's FinTech landscape.
We also invite amazing guests who are innovators and industry players that are driving the change that is helping make financial services more modern, innovative, and inclusive in India. Come join us as we explore the changing landscape of FinTech in India.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of India FinTech Diaries. I'm your co-host, Hemant, and this is the show where we discuss the latest trends in Indian FinTech, speak to some amazing guests from the industry, and dive deep into specific FinTech themes.
Hi, everyone. I'm your co-host, Elroy. In our last episode, we spoke to the founder of Kisht and got a peek into the world of BNPL. The topic intrigued us enough to look at doing a deep dive into BNPL. So today we'll look at dissecting the origins of BNPL, business models, regulatory aspects, and we hope that we can shed some light on this very interesting topic. But first of all, let's start with the basics. Hemant, when you think of BNPL, what immediately comes to your mind?
Well, Elroy, when I think of buy now, pay later, or BNPL as it is called now, I typically think of installment loans where I can buy something with no upfront payment and then pay it back in, say, 6 interest-free installments. This concept has always been pretty popular in India, and I remember in my childhood we buying, say, a television or refrigerator in a similar model. I've seen similar manner in which goods are purchased where you make a small upfront payment and then you pay through 6 installments.
You know, for me, Hemant, BNPL as a term is more of a convenience factor, right? Where I can actually lump through several small purchases and clear the payment at the end of, say, 14 days. But that's really for small ticket payments. If I had to widen the definition a bit and also add larger installment loans to qualify as BNPL, for me, I think there would be some criteria that a loan or a product should meet for me to look at it as a BNPL product. So first of all, I think it should be available at checkout, right? Either via POS terminal or to the card instrument that I'm using it, right? And on online, it could also be on the checkout page.
Right.
And it should also be very frictionless. So I, as a consumer, should not have to say, do a complete sign up again, look at filling an entire KYC form, etc., just to get that particular product. And then ideally, we should look at these kind of BNPL products to be at most maybe 6 or few installments. And best case scenario would be interest-free, right? Otherwise, it looks like more like a traditional POS finance rather than a new age BNPL product. But now when I introduce the term new age BNPL product, what exactly does this mean? So let me just get a little into the history about how BNPL came about. So if you look at modern BNPL, to a large extent, it owes its origins to how this entire term and this entire sector started in Europe. In 2005, three gentlemen, Sebastian Simowski, Nicholas Aldebrandt, and Victor Jacobson pitched the idea of a pay later product at a Shark Tank-like competition at Stockholm School of Economics. And this was a pretty prestigious event. You even had the king in attendance in this particular event.
Wow.
Now, the idea actually came last in the competition because many felt that banks would never go for something like this, right? And instead of being disheartened, these three guys managed to get some seed funding from somewhere. And they started a firm called Creditor AG, which later came to be known as Klarna. Now, in the initial days, the MVP product that Klarna came up out was a very basic idea where a customer could present a bill to Klarna, right? And Klarna would pay the merchant and get the money back from the customer in 14 days. Klarna immediately started getting good feedback from customers saying this is a great idea, it helps make a life simpler. But more importantly, they started getting feedback from merchants, who saw two main things happen, right? One is cart convergence to sales started increasing. And two is the checkout amount started growing by almost 20% when they started offering pay later with Klarna. Gradually building upon this initial success, Klarna scaled in its home markets of the Nordics and then to Germany, Netherlands, and UK. Now by 2013, it was a unicorn with 10 million customers. And today it has grown to valuation of about 10 billion plus, servicing 75,000 merchants and 60 million customers. Similarly, in Australia, Afterpay started the BNPL charge in 2014, and over in the US, a firm started with this concept in 2012. BNPL is truly gaining traction around the world and getting global recognition. But Hemant, if you have to look at India specifically, right, where do you think the BNPL entire journey started, and what are some of the firms that are at the forefront of this?
Before I get to that, Elroy, let me tell you that backstory of Klarna, I was not aware about it. That's a very, very interesting tidbit. Now, coming back to the question. In India, the concept of BNPL has existed for some time now through POS-based lending. But the focus on more modern BNPL option has only been accelerating in the last few years. Simple, which launched in 2015, is possibly one of the earliest pioneers in this space and has today close to 8 million users with 1 million of them active. In the next 3 years that followed, we saw multiple BNPL launches, including LazyPay by PayU, Ola Postpaid, ePay Later, Paytm Postpaid. Even large e-commerce merchants, Flipkart and Amazon, have joined the BNPL bandwagon. Even banks are now rolling out Pay Later options, with ICICI Pay Later being the first of them. Lastly, BNPL continues to be a popular option at POS checkout. In fact, Pine Labs processed INR 17 billion worth of purchases through Pay Later options in October 2020 alone. And this amounted to almost 14% of Pine Labs volume. So like rest of the world, BNPL is here to stay in India as well.
But Hemant, let's at least step back a little and take a look at the larger picture also, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how large do you think this market, BNPL market, is globally? And what do you think is the outlook for India? And I think the third question I would have typically is, what's driving this entire sector?
That's an interesting one, Elroy. While the definition of BNPL differs, there is one consensus among analysts that watch this space. The market is huge. On the higher side, CB Insights indicated that it could grow as much as 10 to 15x by 2025 to over $1 trillion. Other more conservative estimates put the number at about $700 to $800 billion in GMV by 2025. And in all this, India will continue to be one of the markets that will see high growth of BNPL. On the consumer side, one of the big issues has always been lack of credit. As per the latest RBI statistics, today we have about 900 million debit cards in the country, but only 62 million credit cards. Now, as Gen Z enters the workforce, they will increasingly move towards more easily accessible credit sources like BNPL for both credit and convenience, rather than the traditional credit card which we generally, people our age, are using, right? But on the merchant side, if BNPL can show a definite uptick from sales, it will certainly see widespread adoption. An example is Swiggy reported increase in purchases and purchase amounts both when it turned on Simple as a BNPL option for its consumers. While it's certainly interesting to see what is happening in India, let's get back to the basics first and understand the basic model of BNPL. What are the some of the BNPL models that you have seen, Elroy?
So that's a very good question, Hemant. And it's also a slightly confusing one because the way BNPL models are structured, right? It's always been a bit difficult to understand since they kind of blur the lines between payments and lending. But let me answer this by looking at BNPL models in two layers. The first layer is what I call as a product layer or the product proposition. And in it, I can see three distinct models that have emerged. Now, the first model is of the kind that Simple provides, that's more centered around convenience and works more like how a charge card does. So you're a customer is assigned a small revolving limit, let's say about INR 10,000 to 15,000. The customer can then purchase items within the limit. And at the end of 14 to 15 days, the customer is then presented with an bill or an invoice that lists out all the purchases he's done within the 14-15 day period. And then the customer must clear the entire bill in full. This is very similar to the traditional Khata credit system that you see in our neighborhood Kirana stores, for example, where you can get groceries on credit and you typically settle the overall bill at the end of 14 days or 15 days or sometimes even a month. A second model, which I call as Pay4, has seen more widespread adoption in the West by firms like PayPal and Affirm, etc., right? So in this model, which is typically used for slightly medium to big ticket purchases, the purchase amount is broken into four equal installments and hence the name Pay4. And the first installment is immediately debited from the customer's account. The next three installments are debited once every 2 weeks from the customer's account. And this entire loan or the entire credit that the customer gets on a BNPL basis is typically interest-free. I guess the 2 weeks is probably because the frequency of paycheck payments is probably once every 2 weeks in the West rather than monthly in India. Now, this Pay4 system may have small processing fees, but generally does not amount to much as in terms of additional payment by the consumer. The last method is the traditional POS lending system, and this could either mean getting a BNPL option when you do a checkout or having it built into the card that you're using. Now, here at checkout, the customer will automatically split the amount into several equated monthly installments of 6 to 12 month duration. Again, like I mentioned, either by selecting the option while checking out or doing a post-purchase split of that amount into various installments. Now, these loans will typically bear interest or maybe even be interest-free. Most banks offer this on online e-commerce platforms today in India. But due to regulatory restrictions on offering interest-free loans, the way they construct the interest-free loan is slightly different. So the way they've done this is at checkout, the customer is typically presented with the entire amount, which is inclusive of the interest component as the amount of the BNPL loan. The e-commerce platform then issues a cashback to the customer that amounts to the entire interest amount, and the customer effectively then gets a 0% BNPL loan. Now that I've spoken a little about the product layer, let me move to the next layer, which I call as the distribution layer, the distribution model. Here also, there are four different models that emerge. The first is a direct merchant supplier or merchant first BNPL model. So here the BNPL provider focuses more on acquiring merchants, building a wider acceptance network where its BNPL payment method is accepted, and using them as a distribution channel for BNPL. So firms that focus on the convenience factor typically go down this route. And in India, examples of this are Simple, LazyPay, which would be good examples of this model. A second model is that of a multi-lender network. So here the network or platform connects merchants to multiple lenders. An example of this is in the Indian context is the various EMI options that are offered by various banks that are available at checkout to customers on large e-commerce platforms like Amazon and Flipkart. A third model is BNPL or convert to EMI options that are offered directly by debit and credit card issuers to their customers. Now, these are already being offered by leading banks in India, and most banks let you convert your large ticket transactions over a certain threshold value into EMI on a post-purchase basis. So the key benefit here is that there's no need to create a merchant acceptance ecosystem, and this rides on the existing card rails. And the last distribution model, which is one that is slightly different and is not really seen in India yet, is a white labeling where a set of customizable options are offered to merchants and marketplaces to enable them to offer their own BNPL solutions. I at least haven't seen any good examples of this model at scale in India yet.
Understood. Laura, that's an excellent exposition of the model, but I couldn't help noticing that you kept mentioning 0% loan, interest-free loan as a feature of some of these models. So if everything is 0% and interest-free, how do BNPL firms make money?
That's a very good one, Eamon, because even I wondered this a lot. If everything is 0%, how do these firms actually make money, right? So the way I looked at it is I looked at the various revenue and cost streams. So let's dissect this a little bit for BNPL players that typically offer a 0% loan. So in the interest-free model, typically a majority of the income that the BNPL player makes comes from merchant fees. So in more developed economies, this merchant fee can be as high as 4 and 5%, with the rationale for charging such a high rate being that by offering BNPL, you see a significant uptick in the GMV processed by the merchant, usually a 20-30% uptick. Now in India, this amount is much lower, and most BNPL products typically charge about 1.5 to 2.5% for the service. Now rest of the income typically comes from fees, which may be processing fees or late fees. Late fees in India are typically a flat structure where it's a flat 250 rupees for a late payment, for example, or some kind of a daily late payment fees where a daily amount of maybe 10 or 11 rupees is charged for every day the payment is late, with an overall cap of say about 30% of the amount. On the cost side, now when I look at the cost side, there are four major cost items: operational cost to keep the lights on, repayment processing cost to process payments, funding cost to keep the credit line, and finally delinquencies and write-offs. Now, given that the repayment processing cost could easily be up to 1%, that leaves a very narrow margin for the various BNPL players to actually manage and turn profitable. Therefore, controlling the other three cost heads becomes very important. Now, which brings me to the other important question, Hemant: how are some of these companies underwriting the customers, and what delinquency levels have we seen? And my second question is, how are they looking at actually funding from a regulatory perspective?
That's a tricky one, Elroy. Approaches taken by players vary actually, with most betting on alternative data sources like online behavior, history with merchants, etc. to build profiles of consumers that can be used to issue the lines. Of course, as customers repay on the platform, their scores can be adjusted to reflect this. leading to higher limits being made available to them as they go forward. If BNPL players in India are to be believed, defaults are actually quite low and hover in the range of, say, 1 to 2%. Now, globally, this number is tending to be much higher and tending towards, say, a 5 to 8%. Now, it remains to be seen if Indian numbers also start following the global trends over time, what will happen? Now, another key thing to note as far as delinquency is concerned is that these small ticket BNPL loans are typically not reported to the bureaus. Now, that may create, say, two problems, right? One is that it creates an incentive for customers to default as there is no negative repercussion. And two is that the true levels of customer indebtedness is often hidden from other lenders as BNPL becomes more popular. Which brings me to another key area of focus, which is regulations. Now, which is the question that you asked as well, right? Now, global BNPL providers have typically taken two routes to operating, which is either partner with an existing financial institution, which is the originator of the loan, or to lend on its own books. Within India too, similar constructs exist wherein BNPL players are either partnering with existing financial institutions or lending on their own books. For example, Amazon Pay Later is actually a partnership between Amazon and two credit providers, Capital Float and IDFC First Bank. LazyPay, as another example, lends through its own non-banking financial company or NBFC called PayU Finance Private Limited. While this is straightforward, I think a more contentious issue is whether the Payments and Settlements Act should also apply to those BNPL companies that are building merchant acceptance networks and functioning like a quasi-credit card. Now, I guess as the sector becomes more popular and systemically important to RBI, it will definitely bring clarity to this area and maybe and possibly lay down clear reporting norms for BNPL loans.
I think, Hemant, our conversation today has given our listeners a lot to chew on for this week. In the coming weeks, as we cover more firms that are bringing BNPL to life in India, I think the listeners will also be able to appreciate some of the points with a much finer detail. Hmm. So do look out for our forthcoming episodes where we'll look at interviewing certain BNPL service providers that are at the forefront of the BNPL revolution in India. That's it for India FinTech Diaries for this week. Do keep an eye out on our website, IndiaFinTechDiaries.com, for exclusive companion content on topics discussed on the show. And until next time, stay safe.